everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the serves up. That's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Patrick Creighton. Look in my eyes,
what do you see? This is the only live and local evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you at 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. On the HRMP listener line, on the text line, on the X tweets at PeteBrayton1, Brian McDonald on the side of the glass at the master controls, at Sacked by BMAC on the X tweets. On Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, ESPN975 app, tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975, take it with you everywhere you go. You know you want to. Not a good night for the Syracuse Orangemen. They're getting spanked by Vatek. Love to see it. In my business, since like 75% of the people in this business all went to Syracuse.
That's a low number.
Every time Syracuse
like
92%. Loses, every time Syracuse loses, a kid gets a puppy. It's true. Every time Syracuse loses, a kid gets a puppy. Every time they give up a sack, a kid gets a puppy. Every time they give up a touchdown, a kid gets a puppy. Every time they're down at the half in basketball, a kid gets a puppy.
I didn't realize you had this much hatred for Syracuse.
Oh. There is nothing more annoying than an NCAA tournament time. If Syracuse wins a game, like all the Syracuse alums just spamming all over the internet. Oh, yeah, Syracuse! That's why I like Paul. Paul's the only Syracuse alum who's like, nah, screw that. For all the money I paid to go there, you can kiss my ass. He's the only one. Everybody else, you know, they're boot licking the orange. Used to be the orange men, but now they're just the orange. St. John's used to be the red men, now they're just the red storm. No more men. Just fruit and fake storms. That's all they are now. Today, it was official. Dusty Baker will no longer be the manager of the Houston Astros. Dusty Baker will no longer be the manager of anyone. Dusty, calling it a career and officially retiring.
I just want to say thank you. You know, retiring from the field here in Houston, I haven't made up my mind yet. What I'm going to do or where I'm going to go. First, I'm going to go home, talk to my daughter to think that she's my mother, and spend some time with my grandkids and let the Lord tell me where to go and what to do, you know, with my life. And I still feel like I haven't done what I'm supposed to do in life, so I feel the Lord has some great things ahead for me.
Well, he is correct. He has not done what he's supposed to do in life because he was supposed to play Yonner Diaz. Supposed to play Yonner Diaz. He was supposed to play Chaz McCormick. Did not do what he was supposed to do.
Well, he did get Chaz banana pudding, though.
Allegedly. We don't know how many times.
I mean, would you rather have banana pudding or would you rather play in the field?
Probably rather play in the field.
I don't know. Banana pudding's pretty good.
Because I feel like Chaz playing in Houston, there's a lot of places you can get really good banana pudding in this city.
I mean, that is that a question that Dana Brown and GM Jeff Bagwell will ask the next manager candidates? Will you get Chaz banana pudding?
I feel pretty confident that our boy Kobo will make Chaz all the banana pudding he wants.
Now, I haven't seen that on the menu at Kobo's, but I do agree. If Kobo were to decide to make some banana pudding, it would be killer.
So it's not on the menu.
Oh, but you've had it?
No, when Chaz was there,
oh,
he made like massive trays.
Did he really?
And it was allegedly, And I say allegedly because I didn't personally have it. But everybody who did have it basically had a foodgasm.
Yeah, so, I mean, everything Kobos makes is amazing.
By the way, shout out to him. He won the Culture Map Best Sports Bar in Houston.
From the tailgate, yeah. Jeremy and Joel were out at that event yesterday doing the Killer Bees, so yeah.
And if you've never been to Kobos, number one, what the hell is wrong with you? If you've never been to Kobos, you need the
brisket quesadillas. Yeah.
You need the
birria tacos.
The birria tacos. You need the brisket quesadillas. You need the brisket mac and cheese.
That too. Get them all.
Oh my god, the brisket mac and cheese.
They do like a Monte Cristo type sandwich. I believe I think it's a Monte Cristo.
But the
also fantastic.
The brisket mac and cheese quesadilla and the birria tacos are foodgasms. And if you haven't had those, you are missing out on some of the absolute best bar food you will ever have in your freaking life.
Best food, period. I mean, that's qualified as bar food.
It is amazing. And when I say bar food, I mean it's not coming on a giant plate with somebody serving it to you wearing white gloves.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's
just feels like calling it bar food is a slight. Because it is way elevated above bar food.
I think it's just bar food is, you know, it comes on a tray. You get it yourself or you pick it up yourself versus restaurant food where somebody comes and serves you.
Right, as if
your name is Jeeves or their name is Jeeves. They come and bring – they're wearing all black and white gloves and they come and serve you. And they call you sir. And they speak with bad accents. You know,
I haven't been to that restaurant.
Those are the kind of, you know. So, but some of the best food you will get, not just in this city, but in any city, is a Kobos. And congrats to him. Number one. And once you go there, you'll understand why.
So they are now the reigning.
Defending. Yes.
Undisputed. Best bar in Houston.
Best sports bar in Houston for at least a full calendar year. That's pretty awesome.
Eat, sleep, win tailgate awards, repeat.
And listen, I know Kobo a long time. I remember when he was operating out of a trailer way the hell up in Tascosa,
right?
Yeah. I mean, this is his life. He has put everything he has ever done, everything he's ever made has gone into that business. And to see him work that hard and be this successful, man, I love to see that. You love to see people, you know, started from the bottom, now they up, right? And
I think Drake wrote a song about that.
F Drake.
Come on,
Drake,
man.
Didn't sound like a 12-year-old, maybe I would care.
Drake always represents Houston. He loves Houston.
Can we drown him?
Well, you might catch a rap for that, but
I mean,
I'm not going to personally
pretty sure
stop
there's
you.
A pastor around here who would have let him drown.
Well, he tried to let the entire city drown.
So I feel like it should be okay to drown him. And then send him back to Canada.
Oh, I was about to say, drown him and call it baptism.
Yes. That'd be awesome. Dusty, here's more Dusty Baker talking about when he actually came to the decision that it was time to step aside.
Well, I started this winter thinking about it. And then there were a couple instances, a couple articles, a couple things that kind of made up my mind. You know, in late summer. But, you know, that didn't have anything to do with tarnishing my job or anything like that because I wanted to win, you know, the pennant and then leave. You know what I mean? And the same thing happened in San Francisco. I knew I was leaving in San Francisco, so I wanted to win, you know, and go out the door. But sometimes your plan and life's plans are two different things, but... You know, I got to the door, but I didn't quite get through the door.
So that's a lot of rumbling and rambling and roundaboutisms of I knew it was my last year, so I wanted to win, but we didn't win.
Yeah. Yeah. He says it almost comes off like he made that decision like, well, he mentions the winter, so probably right after the season. It makes me wonder if they hadn't won the World Series last year, if the Astros don't come back from the 2-1 deficit and beat the Phillies, does he even return this season? Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe the only reason he might have come back was to defend the title, and now that they're no longer the defending champs and a new champion will be crowned, that's why when he decided to step off.
It kind of sounds like he was, because remember last year, hey, we won one, let's win two. Like, he's all excited, want to get back to work. And now after the loss, yeah, well, you know, I mean, God and things I have to do and God and I don't know.
He mentioned reading, like, some articles. Now, obviously, he didn't elaborate on what he read or who it was by. And this may not even be related to it. But I have wondered if this season and the constant questioning about Chaz and Yiner, like, kind of got to him. Like, he's, you know, I'm 74. I've won 2,000 games. I'm one of the most accomplished players, managers, most important people in baseball history, and you guys who've never played the sport are questioning my lineup? I wonder if that got to him and he decided he'd had enough of it.
See, I know everybody listens to that line and thinks he's talking about the media and the fans. He's not. He's talking about the guys in the front office.
Yeah, that's part of it too. I mean,
who wear the
Brown,
khakis, yeah, and work in the R&D department and do the analytics. And people always look at it and go, well, you know, when they fired James Click, which they didn't really fire him, they offered him a one-year deal, which was kind of a big insult, and he rejected their insult. But when they parted ways with James Click, oh, they're getting away from analytics. No, the day they hired a 71-year-old manager who will flip the bird at analytics and has done so for 4 years, that was the day they were not going to be 1,000,000% analytics only. They hired a manager who could give two bleeps about analytics and has made lineup decisions, substitution decisions, and pitching decisions that very much underline how much he could give two turds about analytics for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that is it. I mean, he obviously, we know he fought with James Click a little bit. There was the trade with Contreras for Urquidy that he fought against and won. And we've heard Dana Brown throughout the season multiple times kind of talk through the media like, hey, I kind of wish Yiner Diaz was playing more. So I wonder, even if it's not, you know, the media and the fans questioning him, if, like you said, if the fight with the guys in the front office about the direction of the team is like, you know what? I'm over this. I'm 74. I'm going to go enjoy my retirement.
And every time Dana Brown talked to the media, like, everything he would say would then be couched by, but, you know, Dusty's the manager and he makes the lineup. Like, yep. Every single thing. And, like, this is...
because he knew he was going to lose. I think he knows he's going to lose that fight.
Well, now he is. I mean, look, it was different when it was Dusty versus Click, right? Because Dusty was hired before Click. And there was this battle for power when you have the GM and the head coach who both answer directly to the owner. You're watching, you were literally watching Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien all over again. Because you had two guys who one should answer to the other, but they don't. They both go right to the owner. And it's a battle for the owner's ear. And that's what James Click versus Dusty Baker became. It was a battle for the ear of Jim Crane. And when Jim Crane told James Click, go get me Starling Marte. And then the waters got kind of deep because the Mets started offering big money and he didn't feel comfortable because his models said, yeah, no, this guy's not worth this much money.
Which turned out to be right.
And, well, tell you what, Marte's first year, he was great. Marte's this year was hurt. So yeah. And he played like a guy who was hurt. But the point is, the owner told him to go do something. He didn't do it. He didn't come back and go, hey, Jim, this is where the number is. Do you want to keep going? He just passed. And that caused a fracture in their relationship that Click never knew how to overcome. And that became most evident when he had a deal to trade Jose Urquidy for Wilson Contreras. And Jim Crane said, hey, Dusty, what do you think? Dusty's not the GM. Hey, Dusty, what do you think? And Dusty said, no, I want Maldi. I want my 189 hitting catcher. That's who I want.
The fourth worst hitter of all time.
And Jim Crane said, Dusty said no. It's a no. That's literally how that happened.
That almost feels like an FU from the owner. Like, okay, you're going to ignore my order and let me rub some salt in your wound here by having Dusty, the anti-analytics guy, tell the analytics guy, no, your trade doesn't make me happy. I'm not going to do it.
You know, when Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch here, they operated on Luno's model, which was the partnership between the GM and the manager working together with the front office, with the research department, with the analytics team, and they worked together. The day Dusty got hired, and there was actually no GM at the time, Dusty, this is my show, I do it my way. And James Click, who came from a team, highly analytics driven, and he wanted to have that partnership, and Dusty said no at every turn. And then they brought in Dana Brown, who comes from an organization in Atlanta where they have that partnership, and he comes here and he wants to be respectful of Dusty, and does, listen, ever all that stuff you did in Atlanta, I ain't doing that crap. It's my team, I do what I want. And as much as Dana would try to, hey, look, this is the best way we're going to put this team together, Dusty, I don't give a bleep. I'm going to put three catchers on the roster so you can use Yonder Diaz to catch, to play first base, to DH. Dusty, ZFG. Hell, Dusty was starting Salazar behind a plate. Dusty, like, carried his animosity for Click over to Brown. Because, again, Dusty didn't answer to Dana Brown. He answered to Jim Crane. And when Dusty says, all these guys who didn't play, he's not talking about you and me. He's talking about the front office and all the guys with the glasses and the pocket protectors and the khakis and the nice shoes. You know, he's pointing to them and saying, all you nerds don't know anything. So the problem is, as history has shown, nerds actually do know a lot. And they can figure things out way faster than the uneducated, but I'm a jock. Yeah, we know, because the nerd's the guy who took all your tests you could pass. All right? So, you know, every time somebody goes with the, well, you didn't play at the highest level, so you're not mentally capable of understanding the game. Let's remember who graduated with a 4-0 and who didn't graduate, okay? Let's just keep that in mind. We'll get more from Dusty. We'll hear more from the owner, from Jim Crane. We'll also hear from Todd Callis, who was on with the Killer Bees earlier today, coming up here on Late Hits. First, you got to tell you about our friends at Iron 24 Fitness and Recovery. You know what? If you're looking for a new kind of experience at a gym, it's Iron 24 Fitness and Recovery. How many times have you had to go to a gym and you got to go in and then there's some, you know, snot-nosed punk behind the dais and they're trying to ask you all these questions and trying to upsell you on 35 different things. And then they go, all right, well, now we got to take you around the gym and walk you around like a puppy dog so that everybody can see, oh, you're the new person. Yeah. You don't have to do any of that. It's all digital. It's all online. You sign up on the app. You go to the gym. You're done. That's it. No sales calls. No nonsense. No tours. No BS. It's perfect. They got plenty of machines, free weights, cardio. They've got these great recovery rooms with infrared saunas. I mean, look, it really is pretty high tech. You're going to like it. And everybody there is kind of there for the same reason you are, which is I want to get my workout in and I want to be left alone. Let me do what I'm doing and don't bother me with, oh, hi, we're going to do this program next week. Do you want to, you know, spend like an extra $300? No, shut up. Go away. You don't have to deal with that. Every Iron 24 is 24/7 and you could go in to any location. It's not an upcharge. There's plenty of places. If you want to use more than one location, you got to pay extra. You got to have a higher membership. No, now you use any one you want. They got four locations around the city and more opening soon. So here's all you got to do. Go online to iron24.com/ESPN. iron24.com/ESPN. Get started today. Sign up today. It's fast. It's easy. iron24.com/ESPN. In fact, right now, for all ESPN listeners, all the new members for ESPN, you're going to get 2 weeks free. You're going to get no sign-up fees. You can get started right now. Go to iron24.com/ESPN, Iron 24 Fitness and Recovery.
ESPN 97.5.com on the Chase Long.
I've got a Chase Long in my dressing room and a pack of warm beer that we can consume.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
You know, B-Mac, we were talking about, you know, Dusty's comments where they, you know, pointed to the media. And this quote was attributed to if he felt mistreated by the media. Here is Dusty Baker.
Somewhat, yeah. But, you know, I learned from Hank, and I learned from really from Buck O'Neill, because those guys had a whole bunch to be mad and bitter about. But Buck used to tell me, he said, hey, man, bitterness don't do nothing but eat you up, you know. And vengeance is somebody else, because, see, some of those people won't have good luck. I certainly believe that. And I've seen that in my life, that the people that mistreat people, my mom used to tell me all the time, God don't like ugly. And I don't know if y'all ever heard that before, but he does not like ugly. So I'm trying not to be ugly.
See, Dusty says he's trying not to be ugly, but he's being ugly. He's being a bitter bitch here. And I hate to say that about Dusty, because look, For three of his 4 years, his first 3 years here, he caught nothing but flowers. For 3 years, he caught nothing but flowers. Especially his first year here, on the back of the scandal, thanks to Rat Fink backfires, with literally every starting pitcher on the team getting injured. Going through like 17 guys in the bullpen, more than half of whom made their major league debuts in 2020. You know, you guys remember Andre Scrub and Enoli Paredes? There's a reason why those guys aren't in the majors. Dusty got nothing but flowers. They finished under 500, he got flowers. They lost to the Braves in the World Series with half a pitching staff. All season, Dusty got flowers. They won 106 games and go to the World Series and win, and Dusty gets flowers. This was the only year Dusty was criticized for the things that he did. And he deserved to be criticized for the things that he did, because what he did made no bleeping sense. When you are down your two best hitters in Altuve and Yordan for extended stretches, when another one of your better hitters doesn't play for five friggin' months, when your team can't bleep and score, and you're running out Maldonado and Corey Jolks and a handful of other guys, you know, career minor leaguers or guys who can't hit, and you've got the number one hitting prospect in your organization with his ass nailed to the bench. That's on you, Dusty. When Corey Jolks, a career minor leaguer, had 50 fewer at-bats this season than Yiner Diaz, and Corey wasn't on the team for 2 months, that's on you, Dusty Baker. Okay, let's just call it what it is. These were your decisions. In the month of May, when Rafael Montero couldn't get a five-year-old out, and you keep throwing him out there in the eighth inning, that's on you, Dusty. People are right to criticize you when you do things that don't make any damn sense.
You think he's just thin-skinned in this example?
And this is the crazy thing, right? Dusty talks about Buck O'Neill and Hank Aaron, right? And he played with an all-time great manager who was a great player in Buck O'Neill. He played with one of the greatest players of all time in Hank Aaron. He managed one of the greatest players of all time in Barry Bonds. He saw the venom and the vitriol and the hatred that those men dealt with in the 60s, in the 70s. Hell, Barry Bonds, even right through the 2000s, right? And for a guy who's won the seventh most games in the history of Major League Baseball, my question to you is, why do you give a flying rat's tail if anybody criticizes what you have to say? You are a future Hall of Famer. You're a two-time champion. You're a Gold Glover, a Silver Slugger, an All-Star. You're the first NLCS MVP in the history of that award's existence. You were part of the first team in Major League history to have 430 home run hitters on it. Why do you give a flying rat's tail what some guys in the media say about decisions that you made? When did you suddenly become not confident in yourself that these things now bother you when they never bothered you before? Dusty made plenty of boneheaded decisions in Washington. Never bothered him.
Obviously made some in Chicago with the use of his pitchers.
With
Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor.
If we're going to be fair about that, Dusty's use of Wood and Pryor had nothing to do with their injuries. Pryor's injury was caused directly by the type of motion that he had. These are things that were learned after the fact. But Mark Pryor's injuries were caused by his throwing motion.
But still, he took a lot of heat for that.
He did. And he handled it with class and always did. The truth is, he wasn't responsible for that. Kerry Wood was hurt three times before Dusty ever got there.
I'm just pointing to the fact of criticisms he's taken in the past that he handled differently.
He got criticized in San Francisco all the time. They couldn't win.
Taking
the
ball out of Russ Ortiz's hand in Game 6 of that World Series against the Angels. And he gives him the ball, gives him basically the game ball because he thinks he's got the game won. Obviously, the Angels come back and win the series.
I can't tell you how much heat he took in 2000 when they played the Mets in the playoffs. And the Giants got one hit by Bobby Jones, whose fastball couldn't break a pane of glass. Bobby Jones is a one-hitter. And everybody in San Francisco lost their freaking minds. How could that offensive juggernaut team not hit a guy with an 85-mile-an-hour fastball? And Dusty never had this reaction. It was never personal until this year when somehow it became personal.
Do you think the World Series title made him feel more above reproach than he had felt before?
I think it emboldened him in his stance against the general manager because he didn't answer to the general manager. And honestly, I don't think he respected James Click as the general manager.
I also think when you reach the age Dusty is, that starts to begin the time that everyone is okay with you not giving a bleep about what anyone says.
Oh, old people are always happy to tell you, I forgot more than you ever know, whippersnapper. It's like, you forget. These guys have, iPads and phones, and they can access anything in literally 1.2 seconds.
Yeah, they can access the information on the equipment that you don't know how to use quicker than you can remember it.
These guys have longer passwords for like their email account than you have for like anything. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that crotchety old guy, get off my lawn guy, and that showed on Dusty more this year than it's ever shown before. And I think that's unfortunate because, again, Dusty has always been a guy who carried himself with class and dignity, and he should be. A Hall of Famer, no doubt. Should be a Hall of Famer.
First ballot.
Even if not first ballot, second ballot.
He should be first ballot, but we don't have to get into the whole conversation about how broken Hall of Fame voting is.
Voting is insane.
It's ridiculous.
But, he restored dignity and credibility to this organization. They went to at least ALCS Game 7 all 4 years he was here. Even with him going against what would seem to be common sense as many times as he did, they still went to ALCS Game 7. They had a losing record in 2020 when Jim Crane and James Click welched on their promise to boost this team at the deadline, and then they went into a tailspin. They lost like 8 games in a row. And they wound up finishing 2 games under. And then in the postseason, they rallied, and they went to Game 7 of the ALCS against the Rays. Like,
not only Game 7 of the ALCS, but they're down 3-0 in that series and came back to get to Game 7.
This team has players with pride. This team has players with heart. They know who they are. They turn it up. Like, we've seen them do this before. And Dusty is, people say he's a player's manager. He's a veteran player's manager. And when he decides you're one of his veterans, he will stand by you through anything. And as we saw, when the front office tries to convince him to play somebody, he'll play everybody but that guy because bleep you. And just as James Click was sort of asked to leave because he couldn't get along with Jim Crane and he couldn't get along with Dusty, Dusty is kind of being asked to leave because he can't get along with Dan Brown. It is the same thing, just other side of the coin this year. And it doesn't change what a great career he had. It just is why it's ending on the note that it is. Well, we'll hear from Jim Crane coming up next. Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got weights in fish.
We got weights in fish.
There we go.
Late night Houston sports talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by MedUS. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So I heard from Dusty Baker on the day that he retired from the Astros. Now we'll hear from the owner, Jim Crane, who started off his comments, of course, by thanking the guy that he hired to restore credibility to his tarnished franchise.
Just a huge thank you, Dusty, from not only the staff, the entire organization, all the players, all our fans, and really everybody in the building. You were a great example for everyone. We love you, and we'll miss you. And you came in and helped us when we needed some help, and you did a great job. And I think you were the only guy that could do that in the business. So I told you that the other day. Did a fantastic job. The record speaks for itself. He'll be missed, and I know the players will miss him. Always got a smile on his face. Always got something cool to say. He's a great guy and a great friend, and thank you very much for everything you did.
I expected nothing less from Jim Crane than to make sure he gave all the flowers he could to Dusty Baker. And Dusty doesn't, like, Dusty deserves his flowers. Just because we didn't agree with everything he did doesn't mean you don't appreciate the things that he did do, how far he got the team in his 4 years here. You know, you don't have to agree with every single thing that he did to still respect him as what he's accomplished in baseball.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked to you about it 2020. They have a losing record going into the playoffs. They get to the ALCS, lose the first 3 games of that series, and come back and force a Game 7. Then in 2021, without Justin Verlander the whole year, and you lose Lance McCullers in the ALDS, and you still get to the World Series and push the Braves to a Game 6 when your roster was pretty depleted. Last year, obviously, the Astros rolled through the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, but you're down 2-1 in Philadelphia after Lance McCullers gets rocked in Game 3. The team could have fallen apart there, but he kept it together, and obviously they win 3 in a row to win the World Series. And then this year, I mean, half your rotation's decimated by the start of the season. Yorta and Altuve go down for extended absences, and he keeps the team together. Despite it looking like they might not even make the playoffs, then not only did they make the playoffs, they win the division and get to a 3-2 lead in the ALCS before losing the last 2 games at home. So for all our disagreements with his lineups this season, you know, in regards to Chaz and Yonder Diaz, I mean, as far as leading a team and getting a team to play for him, I think he showed why he was one of the best in that regard.
Not the only team this year to lose a 3-2 lead with both games at home
LCS
this year.
Phillies also did that, yeah.
By the way, congratulations to Chris Mad Dog Russo on his own retirement.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he obviously retired, right?
He's a man of his word. He retired for a segment. I think the guy who's the executive producer of his show, he did the first segment on Mad Dog's show, and then Mad Dog's show. So, yeah, he retired for a segment.
So, wait, Mad Dog Russo is an airbag, who won't hold up to his word? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
I can't believe that that's the
Chris
reality.
Chris Russo now joins the ranks of the Mel Kiper Juniors, the Skip Baylesses, the Colin Cowherds as being completely full of turds at all times.
I mean, a man in this city who used to work for a newspaper once said he'd eat the phone book if the Texans didn't draft Johnny Manziel.
Well, I remember the general once saying he would eat a newspaper if something, and then he ate it.
Okay, it was a newspaper. That's what. Yeah, it was.
He ate it.
It was about Johnny Manziel.
John McClain is a man of his word. He ate that paper.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. It wasn't the phone book. It was the newspaper. Yeah, but he did say that he would eat a newspaper if they didn't draft Manziel. And to your point, he followed up on it.
Steve Sparks, I believe, landed on the injured list, back then the disabled list, injuring himself trying to rip a phone book in half.
Baseball's full of so many weird injuries, mostly in spring training.
Marty Cordova winding up with the tanning bed, burned himself.
Richie Sexson once strained his neck putting on his baseball hat.
Dennis Martinez, El Presidente, injured himself putting his luggage on the bus. They said he had Samsonitis.
Was it Moises Alou who tripped over his dog and hurt himself?
there's so many wacky injuries in baseball. It's crazy.
And I'll have to reference this for any young audience members. CDs were a thing that music used to play on before you could download them directly to your phone. But I don't remember if this is an NFL player or a baseball player, but there was a professional, I put in air quotes, athlete who cut his hand, lacerated his hand to the point of missing games while trying to open a CD case. Which, again, to anyone under the age of 25, CDs used to be a thing you had to play music on because you couldn't download them directly to your phone.
Well,
because we didn't even have smartphones back then.
Once upon a time, there was this thing called Napster.
I had Napster. I challenged Metallica's lawsuit and won.
And you could download anything you want on Napster. Hopefully you didn't get a virus. But you could download anything you want on Napster. And back then, that was when cable internet was just coming out.
Oh, yeah.
So living in Queens, I had Roadrunner service. So my internet was so much faster than everybody else's.
Oh, you could download songs in a second.
And you could download a 10-minute song in like 4 seconds.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So my Napster account was low. Like, I had to get 4 external hard drives because I had so much music. And I would then burn them onto CDs as MP3 files.
Right.
So you could put 400 songs on a CD instead of 12.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I miss those days.
I do too.
When I was the cool guy. How many? I got like 300 songs on the CD. What? Yeah, look, they're all MP3. How'd you? What? Yeah, you just burn it on here. Like, don't you have a CDW? What? Yeah, I had all the cool toys.
Did you challenge Metallica on that lawsuit?
No.
Yeah, I did.
I actually owned everything Metallica.
See,
I only on CD, but on vinyl.
See, I did.
I had 10 inches. I had 8 inches.
I mean, to brag.
Because you're going to get all the album art.
Oh, we're talking about albums, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you know, on my big 10-inch record of my favorite song. Brian, I know that lyric. I don't know how many of you know that lyric, but very popular lyric, Aerosmith. Every single was a 10-inch. And sometimes instead of being black pressed vinyl, they'd be yellow or red or gold or purple. It'd be all kinds of different colors that you get in there. And each single vinyl would have different cover art than the album had. So being a huge Iron Maiden fan, the single for Aces High had a different cover art on it. For Tail Gunner had a cover art on it. For 2 Minutes to Midnight, for like older, every, it had a different cover art. And that was like
you got all of them?
I had All of them.
Man.
My entire record collection got destroyed.
In the move here?
When I moved to Texas.
Yeah, I think you told me that story before.
Wherever.
How many records did you have? Did you ever count them?
Over 4,000.
Jeez.
I mean, I had a room with, like, you know, the stackable, the high shelf cabinets?
Yeah.
Like five shelves on each one, like goes almost to the ceiling. I had seven of them.
See, actually,
I had my own music library. Remember, I worked in rock radio. I had my own music library. I didn't pay for most of the stuff that I had. I got them as promos.
Well, you paid for the extra room in your house that you had to add on because you had to store all the albums.
But I used to have all this
stuff. Well, this is a four-bedroom, but it actually has five. One of them is just filled with records.
One of them was just filled with records. I had it filled with records. And I had this big old stereo set from, like, the 70s where I had the huge tuner. And then the turntable, I had speakers that were literally like 5 feet high. And you could take the whole back cover out of them, replace the woofers, replace the tweeters, etc. I eventually bought a separate CD unit that would attach to it. But I had this big old stereo system that was a super hi-fi Yamaha stereo set. And that thing was amazing. Better than anything I had ever bought was what I inherited from my father. And that thing was awesome, and it all got destroyed when I moved to Houston in the move. I don't know what happened. It's like
sounds like you went on the Oregon Trail.
They must have had it where it was too hot in the truck or too hot in the storage. It all melted.
I mean,
it melted.
If this is just a regular trailer, it could certainly get that hot in there. I one of my buddies when I was in high school. Remember how we used to have those big binder folders for CDs where it would have the slots. Yeah. So he had that, of course, in his truck. And, you know, we came back from band practice. Yes, band practice.
And they were all black leather encased.
The artwork on the CD was burned onto the plastic sheet.
Oh, so the jewel box had melted.
No, the CD was inside the sleeves
Listen, I had the sleeves melt.
Yeah, no, the sleeves
didn't
melt. We
couldn't get the CD out. I had to rip the sleeve off.
We could get the CD out, but the artwork that was printed on top of the CD had melted kind of melted, and when you removed the CD, you could still see the outline of what was there. Yeah. So anyway, point being, I could certainly see it getting hot enough for those things to have a problem.
We'll hear from Jim Crane as far as the actual head manager, the actual manager search coming up on the other side. Late hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
You know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this?
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
Back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by MedUS.
All right, B-Mac, how many people at this station right now would you say are Nirvana fans?
Paul Gallant, I would say. You and I, so that's three. After that, that might be the end of the list. I don't know. I honestly, because obviously a lot of the producers are in their 20s, so I think it's obviously well before their time. And then I'm not sure about guys that are a little bit older, like John and Lance, if they were. John doesn't seem like a Nirvana type to me.
That's where I miss Falcon. Falcon and I.
Fred
Fowler.
Oh, Fred Fowler.
Very
much
aligned on the musical taste. Fred was a Nirvana guy. We were both big grunge guys. Is Paul a big grunge guy because he liked it when he was younger or because he went to Seattle?
No, I think it was enhanced by the time he lived in Seattle, but I remember him using a lot of grunge and 90s music in his rejoins, even we were together at the flagship.
That was just him singing Hunger Strike all the time.
Well, he is going hungry.
How? How is he going hungry?
Well, I mean, you'll have to ask him, but I believe he doesn't mind taking food from the mouth of decadence, is what we find out.
I don't think he minds taking food from the mouth of anybody. Paul is very much, I'm Paul Gallant, give me that.
Hey, yeah. Hey, if you're not going to look out for who, number one, who will?
That's it. You know, first order of business is survival.
Yep.
Always got to look out for number one. Let's hear more from Jim Crane talking about the search for the next manager. And he says they just started it.
We've just started working on it. I mean, we've only had a day, so we'll work on it quickly. And Dan and I do the work, and hopefully we can find someone. Be tough to replace Dusty, but we'll have a fluid search and work as fast as we can to get somebody in place.
Brian, what did he say? Could you just replay that one more time? Right up, I'll tell you when to stop, but could you play that one more time?
We've just started working on it. I mean, we've only had a day, so we'll work on it quickly, and Dan and I do the work.
Stop! Who's going to do the work? Who's going to do the work, Brian?
He said Dana and I.
Dana and I.
Is that a red flag for you? Because that's been a red flag for some other people at the station here.
Listen, a lot of people at this station are sheeple. Sorry, they're sheeple. And I understand it's not only this station, it's every station. Every radio station, every TV station. There's lots of sheeple in this city who all want to blame Jeff Bagwell as if he somehow single-handedly sabotaged the team because, well, they want to have a scapegoat. And they don't want to blame Jim Crane because Jim Crane is the owner. And Jim Crane ushered in, you know, the golden age of Astros baseball, so we can't blame him. And they had three assistant GMs, most of the city of which can't name any of them.
Most of is generous.
I would say the three-headed GM is, but the three-headed GM was, because Bill Ferkus, one of the three-headed GMs, he was Future Endeavor during the ALDS. So now it's a two-headed assistant GM monster. Nobody wanted to blame them because they don't even know who those guys are. But the truth of the matter is Jim Crane is a man of his word. Whether you like the word or not, he's a man of his word. And he told us very early on, when the time is right, he will spend money. And he did. And every time he has told us something, he's done it. After he fired Jeff Luhnow, he told us how embarrassed he was, how blindsided he was, and how he would never allow himself to be in that position again. He would be much more hands-on for all things that were done with this organization. And he has been exactly that. I can't tell you how many times we talked about this during the James Click era. How much is James Click really allowed to do because Jim Crane, still feeling burned by Luhnow, doesn't seem to want to give him this autonomy, doesn't want to give him authority, kind of wants to tell him what to do. Like, he'll let James Click do the low-level stuff, the medium-level stuff. When it gets to the high-level stuff, that's where Jim Crane is going to be all over things.
Yeah, when's the last time someone not named Jim Crane negotiated a Verlander contract or a trade deal? Never.
That was in Detroit.
Exactly. With
that
Detroit.
Was in New York.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, the idea of it was Jim Crane. Jeff Luhnow was the GM back then. It was Jim Crane who drove the negotiations for the trade for Verlander in 2017. It was Jim Crane who negotiated Verlander's contracts. It was Jim Crane who initiated the conversations with the Mets to bring Verlander back. It was Jim Crane who pushed the deal for Zach Greinke. It's been Jim Crane who's done a lot of things. It was Jim Crane who wanted Starling Marte. We talked about that earlier, by the way. Jim Crane, when the stakes are large, Jim Crane is involved. Jim Crane likes big, shiny stars. Okay, he likes shiny stars, and he wants to have them.
The way that you talk about it, and it's funny because when you talk about taking team control, kind of being a general manager in his own right, and when he's getting involved in the highest level deals, and then specifically where you mentioned there, where he likes big shiny stars, it almost feels like we're in a way talking about Jerry Jones.
Everybody likes to talk about Jerry Jones because he is the
most famous owner GM. Yeah, The negative side of owner GM, I think, for the biggest example everyone can think of is always Jerry Jones.
But the truth of the matter is, a lot of owners, when things get to those kind of levels and dollars, the owner's involved. Okay? George Steinbrenner was always famously involved in whatever the biggest star, the biggest contract was. George Steinbrenner was the one who brought Alex Rodriguez back to New York over the objection of Brian Cashman when A-Rod opted out of his deal where they were getting like $10 million a year for that deal from the Texas Rangers. And Brian Cashman told Alex Rodriguez, if you opt out, you're gone. Don't even think about coming back. I will not give you another deal. A-Rod opted out, thought he'd get another deal, couldn't get one. Then went back to Cashman. Cashman told him to go stick it. He went to George. George overruled Cashman and signed him directly. When the New York Mets acquired Mike Piazza, that deal was not done by the general manager. That was done directly by Fred Wilpon. That was before Bernie Madoff got exposed and the Wilpons became broke asses. Okay, owners, and we usually talk about owners in the on the rich teams because they're the ones who actually have these kind of deals. Those owners get involved for all the biggest things. And Jim Crane likes to be in the mix. He looks at himself as a wheeler dealer. He looks at himself as he's the guy who will get the deal done and he will win the deal.
Yeah, I mean, what is owning a sports team other than a huge vanity play? And I mean, everything about owning a sports team, because everyone who owns one has already made billions of dollars. I mean, it's nothing but vanity and fun, so why wouldn't he want to be involved in those biggest deals? It makes sense. Hell, if I was a team owner, I would certainly want to be involved.
Now, Crane, you just heard him say they just started the search. On the other side, we're going to play the next quote from him, which I think is even more telling about where they are when it comes to the manager. So we'll wrap that up in the next segment, and then at 9:15 we'll do five reasons. As I'm just kind of adjusting the rundown for Brian on the fly here, as we'll hear more from Jim Crane on the other side. Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
You was a toilet baby. Tiff just plopped down like a little old turd, just right down in the bowl.